There's another documentary that we want to discuss this morning. It screens tonight on TVNZ1, and it's about the former Centrepoint community in Albany, north of Auckland. Centrepoint was founded in 1977 by Bert Potter, and it was meant to be a therapeutic-style commune, a utopia of love and sharing and tight community support. But as New Zealand found out, it became the site of a cult where sexual abuse of children was condoned along with rampant drug use and drug manufacture. It eventually closed down in the year 2000. A new documentary, Heaven and Hell, the Centrepoint story, airs tonight, and it's a gruelling but powerful watch, told mainly from the perspective of some of the former children of the commune, including Christchurch GP Dr. Caroline Ansley. Caroline has penned an open letter signed by other child survivors and those with links to the former community, seeking restorative justice from the adults of Centrepoint who allowed abuse to occur through their own silence or endorsement. And there's a link to her letter on our webpage. And Dr. Caroline Ansley joins us. Good morning.
Morning.
You were sent to live at Centrepoint at the age of 7 with a friend's family. What are your memories of that time, first of all?
I remember being completely overwhelmed, a feeling of being very lost and isolated and alone, which never left me the whole time I was there. I was always on the periphery. I remember being a lot of nakedness, a great deal of nakedness. A sense of my privacy being ripped away from me, with just basic day-to-day acts like toileting, showering, sleeping even was a bit traumatic.
Yeah, everything was communal. Mm, the toilets were completely open, for example.
Yeah. And things like having to use a bucket at night on the deck because the toilets were too far away from the sleeping quarters for us to go and use a proper toilet. So just things like that. It was all, there was just so much extreme exposure. It should be sort of native and natural to your own boundaries as a person and as a child. Yeah.
How did you find yourself there? I mean, can you just elaborate slightly more on the circumstances?
Oh, yes. There was a big upheaval in our family. Someone needed to care for me, and my parents weren't able to.
Right. The thing is, at Centrepoint, you had to fend for yourself. I mean, you didn't own anything. You didn't have personal belongings, really,
no,
did you?
No, and that's something I've heard from people a lot. A lot of people have talked about that. It was all about tearing down some of these boundaries that keep people separate from each other. And I think the whole thing about the toileting and the showering and not having your own clothes and not having toothbrushes, people often talk about how their toothbrushes got taken away from them. And for me as a kid, having lost already so much just to be there, to not even have my own underwear, that was very, very challenging. Yeah,
you described that time in the documentary as being like a little boat alone at sea being tossed around. I mean, they may separate us, all these norms which Centrepoint tried to remove, but as a child, they also help you be secure, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my circumstances in my family leading up to there did obviously rock my boat profoundly, but the additional layer of Centrepoint was this extra deep dive into taking away and imposing upon profoundly unsettling and deeply traumatising things on top of that. And one argument I've heard pushed around a lot as an excuse for why the stories of people like myself should be dismissed is that children who went to Centrepoint were already vulnerable, and therefore we can't really tie in the adult looking back on it as traumatic as being to do with the experiences at Centrepoint. Because if you turned up there and you'd already been through divorce or poverty or mental illness in the family or something complex like that, then, oh well, you know, you're already traumatised, you're already a vulnerable kid, so we don't really need to blame it on Centrepoint. I really object to that, because I think everyone who went to Centrepoint was in that category. You know, I've heard people say that no one went to Centrepoint, no happy person went to Centrepoint. That was the thing about Centrepoint. Everyone was vulnerable. So every child was vulnerable.
We can imagine that's a common riposte.
Yeah.
As you said it, I thought, yes, I can imagine. And like other children there, you had what you've described as some not only alienating and insecure, but terrifying experiences.
Yeah.
At the time, being just seven, you know, without going into details that you don't want to go into, did you recognise a kind of wrongness? You knew as a seven-year-old that things were not right.
Yes. The sense of wrongness was with me from day one, and it never, ever left. The people who came to Centrepoint were socialised to think that the behaviours and the way of life of Centrepoint was wrong because society had it wrong.
Mm.
And I think over time, children who lived at Centrepoint and became teenagers there, they learnt that the normal that they were experiencing was normal. And so it sort of undermined their own natural instinct that what they were experiencing wasn't right. I never lost that sense that it was deeply, deeply wrong. It was with me every single day I was there. The reason this is so complicated, it's deeply, deeply complicated, is that people experienced trauma and then they left, but they left with family who still are and were coming to terms with what happened there, whereas I myself left and then went into a family home, back to my family home, who had no experience of it. So I didn't have the ongoing kind of indoctrination
right.
of my experiences were normal and weren't anything important and a dismissal.
You talk in the documentary about how you didn't really face the full trauma of what happened at Centrepoint until you had your own child and he turned seven, the age you were when you arrived there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who had that innocence and naivety and helplessness. I think it was his helplessness to see how incapable he was of doing anything for himself and how reliant he was on me for his emotional needs and his practical needs. Many of us, I think probably most of the children of Centrepoint, are parents now. It's the why now question, is that we now have our own children to raise, and we see the dynamic unfolding before us, just like I did, of being triggered by our own child. I mean, that is an awful thing. To have an innocent creature in front of us who has done no wrong, triggering our unresolved trauma, that's how it becomes an intergenerational problem.
Looking back as an adult, do you buy the argument that some of the parents who let things happen to their own children were brainwashed and, i.e., a version of powerless?
It's easy for us to judge them. And I have a lot of compassion for the large majority of adults who lived at Centrepoint, because I don't know what I would do if I was 25 and I'd just been left with two preschoolers by a violent husband. That's just a scenario that possibly it occurred, and I needed care and the mental health services weren't supporting me and there were very little social services available, and Centrepoint was being encouraged as a place to go by local health practitioners in Auckland. I don't know what I would do if I ended up there as a solo parent and deeply in need of support myself. Some people did step up, and I don't know what people did or didn't do at the time.
Okay.
But There were plenty of people who did nothing, and that is absolutely true. It's a balance here for me. I know that many of my peers feel very angry at the lack of action, and I do too. I don't want to minimise it and say it's less than it was. It absolutely was. But it's really important to be careful with the judgment, because the judgment isn't helping my generation to move on, because those adults who failed us, we want them to step up now and look at what they did or didn't do and ask some hard questions of themselves. So I feel compassion for them. But yes, I do feel anger, because, like, while I can look back on what happened 20 to 30 years ago, 40 years for some people, and understand that they were in extraordinary circumstances, they were vulnerable themselves, they were suffering under social, psychological constraints that overwhelmed them. The anger I feel now is that actually for most of them, at least 20 years have gone by. They may have moved on, but we are left with the consequences of that. And it's the aftercare that makes me angry, or the failure of aftercare. And many of those people, those adults who were had the obligation of duty to care to us, they didn't just have the obligation of duty of care back then, but they also had the obligation to their adult children to make sure they have done right. They have done what is necessary to repair the damage, because this is a relational wound. It's a social wound. It's a community of people who said that they loved one another and said that they loved the children have not shown love in the last 20 to 30 years. They've just left us to it. They've dismissed it. They've minimised it. They've told us that it wasn't as big as it was. And why? The question I have is why? And that is because of guilt and shame.
Dr. Caroline Ansley is talking to us about Centrepoint and tonight's documentary on TVNZ, Heaven and Hell. Do you wish more former members had come forward to share their stories? Because I think only 4 out of 60 approached.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, I really do. They have been challenging to engage with. I think there's just a lot of wariness, suspicion, a feeling that the media have sensationalised this topic and sought to vilify and damn people. So there's a great deal of distrust, and I think that's why people keep on saying to me, or the adult generation that is, and some of the child generation too, have said to me, like, this has been done. Why are you coming back to this? Let sleeping dogs lie. The past is in the past. That's the narrative. And I would say to those people who feel distrustful, who don't want to move forward, is that while there's been attempts to redress the past, there hasn't ever before been a pairing of telling the truth, which is what the documentary is attempting to do, and seeking justice and finding a way forward to bring about action that changes the discourse and does the right thing in the right place at the right time to make it right. That has never been done before, those two things. And so I would say that's what's different about this documentary, to try to make this very much speaking for the children. It was a work together rather than something that happened to us.
Which brings us to your open letter to the adults of Centrepoint. And let me just read the first line. The intended audience of this letter includes those adult members who were unaware of the abuse at the time it was occurring, those who knew it was happening but did not engage in it, and those who actively participated or enabled it, yet now realise this was inappropriate. This is a bit like your approach is a little bit like the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa after the end of apartheid, isn't it, really?
Yeah, and that's where I got the idea from, frankly.
Right.
I was really inspired by it.
So there's a lot of compassion in here.
It's really complex, Jim. It's not just goodies and baddies.
Watching the documentary and knowing about what happened, it would be understandable if you were simply full of rage.
And many people are, frankly. I've had 20 years as a doctor, and in those 20 years I've spent a lot of time sitting, listening to people's stories, and I've been taught and I've been trained to see the person in front of me as really important and to care about that person's story, even if they've done awful things. And I've cared for people who've done awful things, and I've had compassion for people who've done awful things. That doesn't excuse anything at all, and it doesn't change the fact that people do actually just need to simply step up. But you don't get people stepping up if you don't come to them with compassion.
Just to be clear, the letter implies that perhaps that compassion doesn't extend to adults from that time who still think that abusing children in the context of Centrepoint was all right.
Yeah, no, I don't have any compassion for them.
So what do you want the letter to do?
I hesitate to use this example because I know I am not even slightly an expert in it, but I've recently heard about the concept of whakanoa, a tikanga, I'm no expert, about restoring the balance, bringing back to neutral. And I don't think that the Pākehā worldview really has an idea about fixing the wrongness that happens when people do harm to another. We only have a retributive approach that someone needs to be punished when something goes wrong. And punishment doesn't really help the victim. It might keep that person away for a time, but it doesn't solve the wound. The harm happened in families, and you can't leave your family. You can leave Centrepoint, but you don't leave the mother or father who did nothing, the mother or father who actively encouraged you into harm's way. They're with you. They're still with you 30 years on. And the responses haven't been compassionate enough. They haven't, these, my peers, I'm talking about the response to my peers and to my generation. There hasn't been enough acknowledgement and recognition that has enabled the second generation, the child generation, to move on. And I think there may, I am absolutely certain that there will have been adults in the community who have made right with their children. I don't doubt that. I don't want to forget that there will be lots of people who have made right individually. And that is great. But unfortunately, this was a community wound and it needs a community response. Because I only started to do my work on this 5 years ago. And until then, I hadn't heard anything about making right on Centrepoint. So to reach someone like myself, who was isolated, disconnected, knew no one and nothing, it has to be something that happens, a private conversation in a room privately with another person isn't enough to repair this. If you see what I mean? It has to happen in a more kind of corporate way to lift the shame for all, to repair the guilt that this first generation, I have no doubt, will be taking to their graves unless they work to release it somehow through some real action.
So restoring the balance, and it is the era for it. I mean, it comes at a time when we're hearing some horrific stories of abuse in state care at the Royal Commission hearings, and some going back decades, because the impacts of these travel through generations, don't they?
Oh, boy, they do.
There's one line in the documentary after Bert Potter was convicted on drugs charges and someone vox popped on the street outside the court, says, sometimes when you pull out the weeds, you pull out the wheat. Was there ever wheat growing at Centrepoint? I mean, again, the documentary suggests maybe early on. Was anything worth saving there? Could it, with proper morals and proper love, sorry to use the morals word, but you know what I mean, could it have been a force for good or not? What do you think?
Again, speaking from my own experience, I didn't see that. But, you know, I cannot negate what others have told me, which is that they had some really lovely experiences and lovely time and formed some amazing connections and learnt some skills. Some of the kids have told me how they learnt these amazing skills and they were mentored by some people. And so there was some really great stuff. Unfortunately, the adults of the community, by and large, I think, were too vulnerable to stand up to a leader who led them deeply astray, and because it was a cult, of course, you know, this is how they evolve. It just all went so terribly wonky, and I actually have no idea. I have no idea how you would keep those good things intact without the toxicity from spreading through it and poisoning everyone.
It just felt like an important question to ask, because cults always preach goodness, don't they?
Yeah.
That is the thing.
Yeah, but the leaders, I don't. Yeah. I think they were just self-serving. They were just trying to get their needs met at the end of the day. Most of the adults who I know would like to sign, but haven't yet. That's not to say that most of the adults want to sign. I'm just saying I know of some adults who would like to sign, and they have not yet. And the question they've put to me is, what does it look like? And I think in response to that, I would say that you can't start to work on a hard, hard thing until you've got people in the room talking together. Mm. We haven't actually managed to convince people to get in the room together before, to have the conversation, to open the dialogue. So people have to be brave enough to start to join the conversation, first of all, before we can start to address the what next. And I think that's the point in which to say that there's a lot of people out there in New Zealand and internationally who've done stuff like this before in different spaces. And I would love to hear from those people, because in order for this to succeed, if it does go to the next step of kind of how do we bring about some restorative action that's meaningful for my generation, that's relevant, that addresses their needs currently, we need some help, because we'll need mediators and we'll need a way to make it safe for the people who are the adults and the children of Centrepoint who are coming together. We'll need wise people who understand restorative justice. Myself and Rachel and Kate, who are all in the documentary together, we are joined together as a team wanting to kind of do this. I'm just trying to make it happen. I got captured by the word restoration, and people haven't really understood that. They've gone, what is there to restore about Centrepoint? It was just all awful, you know. That's the kind of response I've got from people. But I would say that this action has the power to take something that historically has just caused pain and guilt and shame and all that other complex emotion, but my vision is to turn it into something that we might feel proud about, something that has history, has dark history, but we now put a new layer of light on top of it.
So the documentary screens tonight. Will you be watching it again?
Oh, yep, I will be watching it. Nelly did an amazing job of bringing in a full telling. You know, it would be easy for this just to be grim and dark and miserable, but it's humorous at times, and she does focus at times in it on the things that were silly and just day-to-day, and it's creative and it's edgy, and I don't think viewers are just going to sit there feeling depressed and crying the whole time. I think they'll have a more nuanced experience than that.
Thank you for being with us and talking to us, Caroline.
That's all right.
Dr. Caroline Ansley, and you can find her open letter on our webpage if you're Googling Sunday at RNZ.